Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
What's up? Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Keith Law going to join us to talk some baseball. He's one of the best in the business from The Athletic. He's got a new book out. We'll talk to him about that. It's all brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life. Oh, man. So during this break, I want to let people behind the curtain. I know I was going to talk basketball here, and I will. I promise. Okay? But during the break, we were having the discussion, continued discussion, about Clayton Kershaw and Justin Turner. And then we got back into the contract thing. And you said, because someone tweeted, that Ryu got 3 years, $80 million. And I said, but you said $100 million. And then you said vehemently that you did not say $100 million. Now, Laura thought you also said $100 million. However, we went back and Laura grabbed the tape, okay? And I need the audience's help on this, okay? As a matter of fact, I need the digital team, I don't know if it's Janice or Carlo today, to have this audio too and ask if this counts that Greg said $100 million or not, okay? Because we were talking about Clayton Kershaw's next deal after this current one is up, okay, which is two more seasons. So he will be 33 years old. And I said, you think he's going to sign another $100 million, another long-term deal? And you said $3 million and stopped yourself and then changed in mid-sentence, because that's what you do. That's just normally how you talk. You change in mid-sentence all the time. But we have the audio, and I want the audience to say, does this count as a $100 million contract for Kershaw by Greg? If this audio justifies Greg said $100 million, yes or no? Now, I want you to line up at 877-710-ESPN. Laura, play the audio. Do you think Clayton Kershaw is going to get another long contract?
Yeah, I do. Absolutely. At least 3 years. At least three, 4 years. 100, absolutely. He's 31 years old. He's the best regular season pitcher in baseball, and he could easily go to somewhere like Texas so he can be close to home.
Wait, but you trust that Clayton Kershaw is going to get another long contract with his injury history?
Absolutely.
You said 100. You stopped yourself because you went to a different thought, but you said 100.
Because I knew I didn't want to actually say $100 million, because $100 million seems like a little bit too much. So no, and then later on, which is
convenient now.
I'm calling collusion, because Laura refuses to go back and find the part where I said 3 to 4 years, $20 to $30 million. That is not $100 million. At least 3 years, $20 to $30 million.
I have one thing to say to you, Greg.
Collusion.
Greg, take the L.
There you go. Take the L. Play the cut.
Did you
one
cut yourself
time.
Up? Did you cut yourself up? Is that you, Laura, cutting yourself up, Laura?
That's great. It was excellent setup, Laura. Great job by you. Laura, play the cut one more time, but you could just stop it after he goes 100 absolutely or whatever it is he said. Just after that part, stop it so people can focus on
that. Do you think Clayton Kershaw is going to get another long contract?
Yeah, I do. Absolutely. At least 3 years. Absolutely. He's 31 years old. He's the best.
Yeah, that's fine. We don't have to play anymore. You said 100.
I said 100, and then I stopped. And it was just cut off in the middle of the 100. I didn't even want to finish that sentence. So I went back to what I was talking about before.
Does that count?
877-710-ESPN.
877-710-3776. Does that count? I need people. Laura, line them up on the phones, okay? Line them up, because I need to know what the people think. This is a show. This is a station of the people, and we will let the people decide if Greg takes the L. Does Greg get a W there, or does Greg take the L one more time?
God, right. This is what you love so much. You just love me getting L's. That's all you care about on this
show. I mean, I don't know if it's all I care about, but I mean, it's, you know, I mean. It does kind of help move the show along a little bit sometimes. All right. So Draymond Green, Laura, real quick, Draymond Green, we have a Draymond Green sound, a Kevin Durant sound before we get to those calls. Draymond Green kind of took out Kevin Durant. So he was talking about The Last Dance and talking about how, you know, the whole Scottie Pippen Jordan thing and how Jordan should have gotten his back and blah, blah, blah. But he equated it to what happened with Kevin Durant with the Warriors. Let me hear that.
It definitely hit close to home. We have a a very important piece of our season, who was a piece of that season, which was Steve Kerr. And I think Phil did what was great, which is acknowledge the elephant in the room, you know, because all year they would, if Phil doesn't do that, all year everyone else is dealing with that somewhere, you know, and whether it's coming in question. So now once you get these questions from the media, we've already addressed that as a team. We really don't need to talk about that, you know. Right. And our situation was a little different, and from the standpoint of it was contracts, but it was on players. You know, it wasn't necessarily the organization. So, for instance, like Kevin took the one-year deal on his own. So that was kind of the elephant in the room.
So he basically said that Kevin should have just been straight with people. Now, I'll say this. It's his right to not be straight with people. But at the end of the day, he did cause more strife. He could have just simply told people, you know, what was going on there. So here's the one about his actual contract. Go ahead.
That was kind of the elephant in the room. And although Steve would kind of hit on it of like, let's just enjoy this year for what it is because we don't know what next year holds, it didn't necessarily carry the same weight, because what should have happened was Kevin come out and say, hey, man, like this is it. Like, so let's do this, or this isn't it. You know what I'm saying? But you can't just leave the elephant in the room, because what happened was the question came to us every day. Like, Clay and myself was asked about our contract. And it was strictly due to Kevin, you know, because while that was going on, Clay was saying, I want to be a Warrior forever. Like, I want to be here. We started this thing. This is where I want to be. And then you kind of had Kevin, like, I don't know what I'm going to do next year. Like, and it don't matter, but it does matter, because you're not the only person that has to answer that question. And to be quite frank with you, you're honestly the last person that has to answer the question, because you don't really say shit. Like, you don't say much to the media. If anything, you tell them to shut the f-
Now, here's where I'm with Draymond. Had Kevin Durant just said, hey, I'm not talking about my contract, and move forward, it would have been over. It's what LeBron did. LeBron's done it a number of times. And look, Kevin Durant has taken the lead from LeBron a bunch of times. And like, let's face it, if you think about it, and this is no disrespect to Kevin Durant. I'm not trying to do this, because we all have people that we emulate. Now, some of them may be competitors. Some of them may not be. But Kevin Durant has basically taken what LeBron has done historically and kind of molded it to what he wanted to do. I'm stunned that that was not one of them, that he didn't just say, hey, you know what? I'm going to just tell you, no, I'm not talking about this. And guys, if you can keep asking me all you want, but I'm not going to talk about it. Don't ask my teammates. I'm just focused on basketball. And if you do that enough, for as intrusive as the media can be, particularly the NBA, because relationships matter so much in the media, you're just going to go away and just be like, all right, fine. He's never going to give us the answer we want, so we'll just give up. So you can control the message more, I think, in the NBA than maybe any sport, because of that, because of the accessibility, because of the need for accessibility for the media. And I just don't feel like he played any of that last season right. Now, granted, some of it was out of his control with the injuries or whatnot. Like, that was just bad. But I'm just talking about the stuff he could have clearly controlled. So I'm with Draymond on that. As much as it was Kevin Durant's decision, and he has every right to kind of take the position he wanted to take, he could have just ended it very quickly by saying, guys, I'm not talking about it. And don't ask my teammates, because nobody knows. I haven't figured it out. I'll let you know. When I know, you'll know. And that's basically what LeBron did. Because again, think about it historically, what Kevin Durant has done. It's been a lot of following LeBron's lead. And look, I'm not saying something that's out of turn here. Kevin Durant once did a story for Sports Illustrated that said, I'm tired of being number two. And it was in reference to LeBron being the best player on the planet. So I just think that when you look at this particular situation and you're Kevin Durant, you probably could have handled it differently, because you took what LeBron did, which was going to Miami, and did it on steroids by going to the Warriors. LeBron joined a team with Wade and Bosh. You know, Wade had won a title, but they hadn't won as a group, you know, like the guys, the only, there was only one carryover from the team that Dwayne Wade won a championship with. Whereas with Kevin Durant, while it's his right, and I don't blame him for it, I'm not doing that, so don't take it that way. He said he took the LeBron model and just crushed it. He broke it. He was like, hell with that. Who needs that Dallas series? I don't need that in my life. I'm just going to go and I'm going to go and get me a title right away. I'm going to fast track that thing. And once I get that, then it's going to be over. People are going to like me just like they did LeBron. You know, eventually, once he won, people got over the villain stuff. Except here was the miscalculation Kevin Durant did in regards to trying to emulate what LeBron did, but kind of skip a step. Was the skipping the step was something that people were going to hold against him. The fact that LeBron lost to the Mavericks was as much grief as he took. And look, even he has said in the past that he didn't handle that season well. He didn't handle the stuff he said after that series well, even though I liked it because LeBron was just real. When he said that thing after that final series against the Mavericks, where he's like, look, y'all can just go back to keep rooting against me, but it doesn't matter. I'm going to go back to my life and you got to go to yours, which probably isn't as good as mine. Now I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically what he said. And yeah, it's probably not the smart thing to have said, but he got it off his chest. And sometimes that's better. Whereas Durant, because he didn't have to endure the struggle of losing the first series and let's face it, the ridicule that LeBron took in losing that first series. You know, LeBron talks about it all the time, where LeBron went into like this 2-week hibernation. Like literally said that to me once, that he went away for 2 weeks and wouldn't leave his room. Okay? Like he grew a playoff beard, but except it was the off season and he didn't want to talk to anybody. That, you know, in retrospect, he was like even distant from his family, that he was so depressed about the way that whole thing went. But that's what motivated him. And it's no different than what we're doing here with The Last Dance, because what we're seeing now, for those that didn't know, we're getting an education on Michael Jordan's struggles and how Michael Jordan wasn't just the guy in the YouTube clips or the highlights on ESPN where he's just hitting game winner after game winner and he's shoulder shrugging against the Portland Trailblazers. No, Michael Jordan got cut as a sophomore from his high school team. Michael Jordan wasn't a prodigy as a kid. That's actually even different from him and LeBron. Now, LeBron's family circumstances were way more unstable than Michael Jordan's, and Kevin Durant's too, for that matter. But Jordan had to work to become the greatest ever. He didn't have the natural ability that some of these other guys have. Like LeBron, as great as he is, has more natural ability than Michael Jordan and is more gifted physically than Michael Jordan. He has that over him coming in, even though he had a much tougher and unstable family life than Michael Jordan did. But back to my point, which is, if you're Kevin Durant, that was a huge miscalculation, and Draymond is 100% right about that. LeBron was able to endear himself a little bit through the struggles, because that's what we want. We live in a society, and it doesn't matter if it's sports, if it's entertainment, we live to build people up, to tear them down, to eventually build them back up again. Okay? That's every walk of life. And it isn't just sports. And well, it certainly just isn't the NBA. Look what we did to Michael Vick. Michael Vick was the hottest thing in sports for a minute. And then he went to jail. And he did his time. And now people look back at him differently after a 30 for 30 because he works in the media now, right? Because he's an advocate, and clearly an advocate for dogs now. But it's the life we live, unfortunately. I'm not saying it's fair, but it's the reality. And because Kevin Durant skipped that step of the struggle, per se, unlike LeBron, people are like, nah, man, we're not messing with you. It's not the same. You're not like LeBron. You skip the step. It's like playing Monopoly, right? Pasco, collect $200, right? It's the same stuff. So, of course, he's not going to get the same recognition. And that's why he ended up leaving Golden State. And he walked away from a situation where they were going to win championship after championship after championship. And I'm stunned that he did it. I mean, I had these conversations with Michael Thompson forever about that. He never, I mean, he lost cases and bottles of Camus to everybody at this damn station who told Michael it's not happening. And that's the difference. And that's why Draymond's right. He should have just shut it down because he wasn't winning the battle of public opinion anyway. Frank in West Covina. Frank, what's up?
Yo, Bergman.
Bergman!
What's up? What's happening?
Man, it totally counts, man.
Oh, get out of here. Get out of here. No way.
Hold on, Frank, hold on. For those that don't know what happened earlier, and I'm sorry that we didn't get to the phones earlier, Frank. Bergman and I were arguing about Clayton Kershaw's next contract, right? We were talking about after two seasons from now when he's a free agent again. And I said, you think he's going to get a long-term deal? And Bergman said that we were arguing in the break that he said that he was going to get another $100 million deal after this one. Bergman said, no chance I said $100 million. We played this audio. Play it, Laura.
Do you think Clayton Kershaw is going to get another long contract?
Yeah, I do. Absolutely. At least 3 years. At least three, 4 years. 100. Absolutely. He's 31 years old.
All right, stop. So, Frank, you say that counts.
That counts, man. You gave it up.
No, that doesn't count. I didn't even finish the thought. The thought didn't even get finished.
Frank?
No, you were just talking, man, and you just, and you, but we knew what you said. It's like when people talking, you know what they meant.
Thank you, Frank. Frank, can you do me one favor, Frank, before you go?
Don't do it.
Say, hey, Bergman, take the L.
Bergman, you're going to have to take that L, bro.
Thank you, Frank. 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. If you want to give Bergman an L or a W, feel free. 877-710-ESPN. I apologize because I didn't get to the Kevin Durant perhaps taking a shot at LeBron part of this equation. We will do that next. Stick around. We're back in 4 minutes. Zidane with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance, and by Straight Talk Wireless. Keith Law is going to talk some baseball with us on the other side, so we'll get into that. Bergman took an L there. You know, it happens, Bergman. You know, you can take an L. It's okay.
I take L's all the time for this show.
I mean, it's your own doing. It's not like, you know, we're just playing back audio of things you said. Like, it wasn't anything that we made up by any stretch of the imagination.
We had a caller that was on my side in the break.
Do we still have that caller, Laura?
No, he didn't want to come on air, but he did say that Greg was trying to say 100%, not $100 million.
Ooh, I don't know about that.
I don't know about that.
Yeah. What does Chico in Highland Park want to talk about? Chico!
Hello!
Yo!
All right, here's the thing. Birdman said 100, and then he gave himself confirmation. Absolutely. That means he took the L. Absolutely took the L.
No, the absolutely Chico had to do with the original point. He absolutely had to do with the original point. It wasn't about the 100. I didn't even saying the 100.
He did get you. Chico, stay there for a second. Laura, play the cut again until he says absolutely.
Jeez.
Oh, Chico dropped. Let me hear the cut again, because Chico's right. You did actually give yourself your own confirmation bias by saying
you think
absolutely.
Another Go long ahead. Contract?
Yeah, I do. Absolutely. At least 3 years. At least three, 4 years. 100. Absolutely. He's 31 years old. He's the best regular season pitcher in baseball. The absolutely has nothing to do with the 100 part. To the point of I didn't even remember saying the word 100 in the break. We were talking about this. The word 100 wasn't even connecting my brain.
Right, but clearly your ears and mind lied to you because you said 100.
Yeah, this is what my girlfriend's always talking about, how I don't remember things that I say.
Yeah, you know what? As much as I gave you grief for her telling you how to dress at the grocery store, she's right about that. That's for sure. There's no doubt about that. Hey, so I mentioned earlier that Kevin Durant was talking about the Jordan doc. And Greg, do you believe that people can compliment one person but also kind of subtly throw shade at another?
Yeah, absolutely. When they're talking about it, they're not always talking about that one thing. It's always something else behind it.
Right. So what I would say is, particularly when you're talking about the greatest player conversation, right, in the NBA, we always hear about LeBron and Michael, right? Like, that seems to be the thing that gets the most traction. Is that a fair way to assess it?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay. So Kevin Durant was asked about ranking Michael Jordan, and here's what Kevin Durant said on the Boardroom on ESPN+.
Psychologically, how do you rank Michael Jordan? One being the best, five being the worst.
One.
Ball handling.
One.
Defender.
One.
Mid-range jumper.
Zero. Like, better than one.
Oh, three ball.
See, that's the one. He didn't shoot a lot because he was so dominant inside the three-point line. He didn't need to shoot any. But when he did, he still knocked some down. But I'll say a three.
Passing.
He was an elite passer. I would give him a zero, too. I mean, a one. I give him a one.
Teammate.
I'd say he was a teammate. I would give him a one for that, too, because he displayed everything you want from your leader, from somebody who's going to take you to that promised land.
He gave him ones on everything. Except three-point shooting. He went on to later say that he's the best to ever do it. Do you believe that is also a jab? Remember I said in the last segment, Kevin Durant once did a Sports Illustrated story that said, I'm tired of being number two, in reference to LeBron being the best player on the planet. Do you believe that was a shot at LeBron?
Ooh, that one's a little bit tough. That's a tough one for me to go on. Michael Jordan is the best of all time at everything, out of all those things. So, no, I don't think that was a shot. I'm going to go the opposite way than you here, George. I don't think that is
a shot. I think because those two are so competitive against each other, right? And Durant thinks he's the best player on the planet. He doesn't think it's LeBron. So it annoys him that LeBron even gets in the Jordan conversation because he thinks right now he's better than him. So I think it's absolutely, knowing the players involved and their more recent history, I don't think there's any question. I'd love to hear what Ramona says about this tomorrow, because she's going to be in riding shotgun with us tomorrow. She's going to be on the show tomorrow, all show. I would love to hear what she has to think about this, because I saw Stephen A. Smith and Max debating it today on First Take, and they both believed that Kevin Durant was absolutely taking a shot at LeBron in that scenario.
I mean, those two guys are much smarter than I am, obviously, with all the L's I take. But, I mean, if you ask Kevin Durant who his number two was on that, he'd say himself. And then after that, I think he would say three would probably be like Kobe or something like that. See, then you're starting to take shots at LeBron at that point, once you start naming other guys ahead of Jordan. Naming Jordan the first in anything is not ever taking a shot at anyone else.
But you don't think it's weird that LeBron was like the only famous person not talking about this documentary yet? Like when it aired?
Yeah, I mean, that is a little bit odd for him not to do that, especially since he's such a basketball head. And
he was everything. Like, he was the one that went on the Richard Jefferson, Allie Clifton podcast and Channing Frye road tripping and said, we need to get the documentary. Come on, ESPN. Remember? And like him and Richard Jefferson were talking about it. So like, I was expecting him to be all over this the other night, and it was like crickets.
I mean, LeBron is very careful about everything that he says, right? Everything that
as he should be. Social
media. Yes. So anything that he would have written on social media, I think would have been misconstrued, no matter what it was.
Or do you think that it was also calculated that he was like, I ain't going to write about this because I need to see the whole thing first before I make any comments? And again, it could be both those things, right? It could be he knows that anything can be misconstrued, hence why he's calculated, but also like, nah, man, I think I'm better than this dude.
And if we see him say, I think I'm better than this dude at the end, then the debate rages on, and he probably gets killed for it from a lot of people, and it's all over social media. It's all over First Take. Well, I mean, hell, we'll talk about that for how long?
Oh, it would be great. I don't think he's going to say that.
No.
But I think listen, you talk to people around LeBron, and they think that after that Cleveland championship, the one that they beat the 73-win Warriors, that he's like, man, that's better than anything Mike did. You know what I'm saying? Like people that are close to him believe that. And there's no coincidence, I think, that Jordan agreed to take the pitch meeting, as Ramona told us, on the day that the Cavs were celebrating their championship at their parade. okay, and that the Warriors had beaten their regular season record. And not to mention that the producer said to him, yo, man, I got a bunch of kids coming into my office who wear your shoes, but they never seen you play. Like, he doesn't want to be forgotten. Like, think about that for a second. And I wouldn't either. Because, yes, people know him as the brand, but people were forgetting him as the player when you're just YouTube clips. And this is a way to educate people. So I think all of that is involved here. I think there's a huge – I've said this to Keyshawn and LZ and Travis during Crosstalk a couple days ago. Like, I think that there's real – maybe not acrimony, but – I think that there is not, they're not warm and fuzzy, those two, LeBron and Jordan. Because Jordan, by the way, and I don't blame LeBron, because Jordan hasn't been warm and fuzzy to him like he has been to other players historically.
Yeah, no, I think we'd be silly to think that this wasn't a calculated move by Michael Jordan to get himself back into the mainstream media again. It's ego.
Yeah,
100%. But I mean, like LeBron.
Oh, 100% now.
No, see, I'm used to saying 100%. That's just the way these things go. But LeBron is a guy, but he has – the only way that he's really going to get – that's why this whole thing really hurts him, is because if he would have won the championship this year with the Lakers, I mean, that is a chip on his shoulder that he now has that's like, look, man, I got three championships, three different franchises where I'm the best player on all three of those teams. I am the leader of all three of those teams. You got to have me up there.
Yeah, it is his stake to it is I beat the greatest single season team. I could win three championships with three different teams as the best player. Those are all things that help his argument. Obviously, he's got physical attributes that Jordan didn't have. So I think that while I think Jordan is still the guy, I think it's closer than most people would give it credit for. Speaking of giving credit to someone, Mike in LA wants to give Greg credit. Mike.
I'm here. You hear me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Yes, I never agree with Greg, but this time I think he might actually be right. He's kind of a little arrogant and stuff at times, and he always thinks he's right. So I think when he said at 3 to 4 and he cut off at 100, he was going to say 100% like he always does, and not 100 million. So I think that he was, and then he thought about it for a second, 3-4 years. Then he thought about it again. He agreed with it. And then later on, he said 100% when you asked him again later about the 3 years. He said, Ryu got 3 years, 80 million, but he agreed with the 3 years part. So I think he would have mentioned the 100 million again then if it would have been meant to say the 100 million.
Okay. All right, Mike. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike, even though that was a very large backhanded compliment at the same time.
Agrees with you. I always love when they preface the statement that way. Trust me, take it from someone who gets that all the time. I never agree with you, George, except this one time I'm agreeing with you, which really means you kind of probably agree with me more than just once.
Right. Anyway. I like the arrogant line in there, too.
I mean, you know, listen.
Pretty arrogant.
There is nothing wrong with being arrogant. I would say it's not arrogant. I would say, and thank you, Mike, for the call. And we appreciate it. Hope you're safe and healthy. What I would say, Greg, is you're confident, is what I would say.
I think that's a good thing in sports radio. Would you not?
I would say in life. Forget about just sports radio.
Sure.
I would say in life.
Thank you.
Hey, real quick, before we go to break, because Keith Law is going to join us in a second, we'll talk some baseball with him and talk about his new book about baseball, which is pretty cool. There's this cool thing trending. It's the number one trending thing on LA Twitter today, and it's hashtag 5 perfect movies. Here are the 5 perfect movies I went with. Pulp Fiction, Dark Knight, Empire Strikes Back, Kill Bill Volume 1, and Major League. And the reason I chose those 5, and there's plenty more I could go with, are probably those are the most rewatchable movies for me. Sorry, Bill Simmons, if you're listening. I didn't mean to steal your word. But I've probably seen those movies a million times. And that's probably why they would be the 5 perfect movies for me.
I agree with a lot of those. Those are all really good movies. The only ones that I would probably do a little bit different, I love Shawshank and can watch it at any second of any day, and I think it's a fantastic movie that there's no slow parts to me. So
I've gotten a lot of grief over not having Shawshank there, but while I do agree it is a fantastic movie, it is, to me, it's not a movie I like to watch over and over again.
And the other one is Princess Bride, and how you don't have Princess Bride is just a shame.
I just think that movie's above average. I don't think it's that great.
I mean, at least above average.
Yeah, but you know who's great? Keith Law. He's one of the best in the business at talking baseball. We'll talk to him about everything that's going on. We'll get his thoughts on what he thinks about the season. He's one of the smartest dudes covering the sport. So we'll talk to him from The Athletic next. One of my favorite Prince songs, Little Red Corvette. That in 1999. Sedona Show with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Keith Law will be giving us the Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Everything for less, only at Walmart. We're waiting for him to call in. He's one of the best in the business at covering Major League Baseball from The Athletic. Used to work here at ESPN. He's got a book out called Inside Game, which is basically how we can kind of analyze all the different moves in baseball and how we can apply them to real life thinking. So I want to talk to him about a number of these things. But I do want to ask him the Kershaw thing that we were arguing about earlier. Speaking of which, if you didn't get that, Bergman and I were talking about Kershaw, right? We started off talking about the line in the sand. Basically, Justin Turner wants to play as soon as possible. He'll play in the biosphere or whatever. And Kershaw doesn't want to do that. He doesn't want to leave his family, which is commendable, and I understand that. But we started talking about his long-term viability if he misses this season, right? Because then he's got another year. And I was wondering, like, do you pay him beyond that? I just don't see Andrew Friedman being one of those guys who pays him. So Bergman and I got into it. Bergman, I thought, said that he would get another $100 million deal. Bergman vehemently denies that. And then we played this audio, and the audience has been deciding yay or nay. Does Bergman get the W or the L? Play the clip, Laura.
Do you think Clayton Kershaw is going to get another long contract?
Yeah, I do. Absolutely. At least 3 years. At least three, 4 years. 100, absolutely. He's 31 years old. He's the best regular season pitcher in baseball, and he could easily go to somewhere like Texas so he can be close to home.
But you trust, fair enough. We heard enough. So it was there. You said 100, but did you mean 100% or did you mean 100 million? So we let the audience decide. Let's go to Ryan in Manhattan Beach. What's up, Ryan?
I really don't see it with Kershaw. There's just too many question marks. Velocity is dropping each year. Lack of obviously playoff production. So I would never see anyone signing him for, you know, over 2 years. I don't know.
Right. And now do you think Bergman actually said 100 million, like long term,
million? I heard him say 100 million.
There you go. Bergman, take the L again.
No, I didn't say the word million at all. It was 100%.
All right, let's talk to Keith Law. He's one of the best in the business at covering Major League Baseball. His new book is called The Inside Game. It's just a really smart way of looking at baseball and all the decisions that go into any particular thing and how the advancements have taken place as well. But before we get to that, real quick, Keith, I want you to settle a debate that we were just having literally a second ago. We were talking about how, you know, guys want to play or don't want to play in this biosphere or alleged biosphere. But we got into Clayton Kershaw, who's kind of drawn a line in the sand. He says he doesn't want to leave his family. Commendable. Totally understand it. But I think the game will move on without him if they have to. So we were talking about his contract situation, because then he would have one more year at $30+ million. And I was like, I wonder what the next contract after that will look like. So my producer Greg and I were arguing over the fact he thinks that he'd get another long-term deal, probably, you know, 3 or 4 years, around $100 million. I don't think he could fetch that at age 33. Like, where would you see him moving forward as he's been trending in a certain direction as his career has moved forward here?
I don't know that I could speculate on what kind of dollars he'd be looking at. I can tell you, he's no longer a number one starter. He's not seen that way by anybody. His stuff is down. And I think he can still be an effective major league starter for a while, but if he's more like a mid-rotation guy, he's not going to get $30+ million a year anymore, because that's just not what mid-rotation guys get paid. And obviously, once you've started to lose some velocity, you rarely get it back, but there's always the chance that it continues to drop too. And that is going to be a concern for any team that thinks about signing him to a long-term deal.
Yeah, I'm with you. Look, he's on the other side of 30. He's had, up before this offseason, he had 4 straight years, right, of some sort of injury that he was dealing with. A couple of them were back injuries, right? Like, that's just not stuff that you look at if you're a smart baseball front office type and saying, yeah, that's the guy I'm going to sign up for $100 million. Like, I don't believe in, if you're, like, let's say you're the Rangers signing him to sell tickets. Like, I always think that's a disaster waiting to happen.
signing a player just to sell tickets? Yes.
Yeah.
Look at Albert Pujols.
Yeah.
He's certainly not producing. I mean, this is a major topic in my book. That contract that he signed was a disaster the day it was inked, and has only gotten worse since then because the Angels don't recognize or recognize and ignore the sunk cost fallacy that you're already paying Pujols no matter what. So the question is just whether you're better off as a team playing him or not playing him. And it turns out they're better off not playing him. Every day that they do play him, they've actually made their chances of winning and their chances of getting the playoffs even lower.
Which is crazy when you think about it. Keith Law joining us here. The book is The Inside Game. It's his second book. His first book was Smart Baseball, which is fantastic, too. You should get that one if you haven't had a chance to read it. What was the idea behind Inside Game?
A number of people in front offices around baseball, including Sig Mejdal, who's was with the Astros at the time. He's now the assistant GM of the Baltimore Orioles, were talking about books like Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman, which I cite quite a bit in the book, that they were all reading these books in this vein about cognitive psychology and behavioral economics, and that they were just trying to improve their thinking, improving their own processes for thinking about major decisions. Because obviously by that point, even a couple of years ago, teams already had lots of data and they were hiring many, many analysts to fill their R&D departments. Now they were trying to say, well, how can we just improve our whole decision-making process so that we make better use of the data that we have? And as I started to read more books in this vein, thought, you know, there's not really a good book out there that explains these concepts for the mass audience. And thought I might be able to do that by using examples of sort of well-known mistakes from baseball history, whether they were mistakes by managers on the field or mistakes by general managers and trades, and signings, and draft picks over the last, well, I go back about 80 years.
What were some of those mistakes that just stood out to you immediately?
I highlight, there's Bob Brenly in the 2001 World Series, who just made tactical error after tactical error, and yet they won the World Series anyway. So for a moment, at least, he was seen as a good manager.
Yeah.
And that's outcome bias. That is judging the process by the result. The result was great. The process that got them there was not great. They won the World Series because of Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling, not because of anything that Bob Brenly did. I also highlight the Gary Matthews Jr. contract when he was given a 5-year deal based off of one, obviously at the time, fluky breakout season, and talk about that as an example of what's called recency bias, where you really overvalue the most recent data, the most recent thing you saw, and ignore most or all of what came before that. And that 5-year contract that the Angels gave Matthews was absolutely reflective of that, because all the evidence he had before that one season was that Gary Matthews Jr. was a perfectly fine fourth outfielder. They paid him like he was a star, like he was going to be an everyday player and then some. And that was a textbook example, one I've used multiple times in my writing over the last 14 years, of, again, ignoring falling for recency bias, ignoring all of the data that you already had before him that said, no, the player isn't what you think he is. It's not what that 1 year is just actually a fluke. And teams still fall for that because all of these biases are things that are just innate to every human. If you're human, you can fall for these things because that's how our brains are wired. And it's about changing your mental processes to improve your decision making. So you may fall for the bias and then you catch yourself before you actually make the decision.
The book is The Inside Game. Keith Law is one of the best in the business at covering Major League Baseball. He works for The Athletic. There are a number of things that I want to get into with you here. We were just talking about Kershaw, but, you know, basically in your book, you talk about for every Clayton Kershaw, there's, you know, probably 9 or 10 other guys that were drafted out of high school as pitchers that have flamed out completely. Why do you think that is that was a thing that continuously happened, that general managers continuously chose starting pitchers in the first round out of high school? Why was that a problem for so long?
So the phenomenon I'm talking about there is called base rate neglect, where teams look at the individual pitchers, they go scout the individual pitchers and fall in love with the pitchers they see, and I'm talking about high school pitchers here, and don't stop and look at the overall data for high school pitchers, which shows that they fail at much higher rates than any other category, college hitters, college pitchers, or even high school hitters. Those groups all get to the majors at higher rates and succeed at higher rates than high school pitchers do. What ultimately happens, in addition to just flat out neglecting this base rate, this overall rate of high school pitchers, teams do kind of fall in love with the individual prospects. And that's what happens with all draft classes. It's just more damaging when it happens with a high school pitcher, which is you go see a guy like Clayton Kershaw, you go see a guy like an Ethan Martin, and you convince yourself he's different. This one is the exception. This is the kid who's going to be so much better than the rest of the high school pitchers. I think sometimes you do that, you're right. You get a Kershaw, you get a Madison Bumgarner. The majority of the time you do that in the first round, you're wrong, and the opportunity cost is higher. The player you could have taken in the first round instead of that high school pitcher is much better. You take that high school pitcher in the second or third round, it's a different story. The opportunity cost of the player you might have taken otherwise is not as high, and that's why taking high school pitchers after the first round is perfectly sound strategy, because you're just not giving up as much when you do that.
My favorite one in the book is something I've had as a conversation I've had with my buddy Boog Shambi, who I'm sure you know very well too, is the case for robot umpires. Like, we literally did a bit about this like 15 years ago, he and I on radio. It was pretty hilarious. But why don't we have that? Like, in tennis, they have the eye in the sky. You can judge if a ball is in or out. Like, I don't understand. The technology is there. Why hasn't baseball gone to this?
There's resistance from a lot of groups. There's resistance from, obviously, the umpires union. There's some resistance from players. I will talk to people at Major League Baseball who worry that the technology maybe isn't quite good enough, or it's going to change the way the game appears to fans. I think ultimately, yes, it will be a disruption, right? The first year that we have automated calling of balls and strikes, which I think we'll see within the next, let's say, 2-3 seasons at most, the first season will be different, right? It will be an adjustment for fans to see that happening, to see the slight pause before the home plate umpire signals, and the fact that, you know, the hitter might turn around and want to argue with the umpire, but there's nobody to argue with. However, ultimately, I think the technology is good enough that we would have no worse results in terms of calling on balls and strikes, and that's based on my conversations with people at Major League Baseball. The errors would be much more consistent and more tolerable. That pitch that splits the strike zone, that, you know, because it's 0-2, the umpire just doesn't call it a strike because of anchoring bias, because he's considering the count and making his call on that pitch. That call is never missed anymore with an automated strike zone. The calls that are missed are going to be the ones right on the edges of the strike zone. Those are the ones you'd expect them to be missed, even without improvements in the technology.
Yeah, and it's possible we see some of that here if we end up getting this biosphere quarantine baseball anyway. So I think people may need to get used to it too. Lastly here, and Keith Law joining us here of The Athletic. Again, the book is Inside Game. It's fantastic. Make sure you check it out. And if you didn't read his first book, Smart Baseball, you should as well too. I know you're a big board game enthusiast. We are clearly living in times where we could use a couple of board games to play with the family. What are you suggesting?
Let's see. Seven Wonders is my all-time favorite board game. It plays only in about half an hour. It plays up to seven people. You need at least three, which is obviously not ideal for everybody. But if you've got a big family and some older kids maybe who are into board games or want to be, Seven Wonders is tremendous. And Ticket to Ride is one I recommend to lots of people because it's very easy for younger kids to play. By the time they're about five or six, they can start to play along. You're matching colors on cards against colors on the board and placing trains on a map of the United States or a map of Europe. And it's really quite simple to learn. The rules are only about a page long. There's a little bit of strategy depth for adults to sort of stay interested, but enough randomness that kids don't get left too far behind. I've played it with, you know, very young kids down to age five or so, and maybe they don't win, but they feel like they can play along, and everyone loves placing trains on a map. Right? It's a train game that just like speaks to something that most kids like.
The book is Inside Game. Keith Law, one of the best in the business at covering Major League Baseball. Check out the book wherever you can find your books, whether it's online or eventually we may be able to go to a bookstore. You can find it there too. Hey, man, thanks for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Take care. There he is, Keith Law, joining us here. All right, coming up next, I got a couple of things I want to get into that we haven't gotten a chance to get into yet, including the Pac-12 screwing things up potentially for you. I'll tell you what that means in a second. We're back in 2 minutes. I love how people are getting creative on giving Greg L's. I want to shout out Sharif Wade. He goes by the handle @reefism. And he wrote, "Dearly beloved, Greg, I'm here to tell you you got the L. And it's a gif of Purple Rain.
It was very clever, very well played. Still wrong, but it was well played.
Thanks to Keith Law for joining us there. If you missed any of our interviews today, you can go check out the entire interview on demand section on the Sedano Show podcast, Apple Podcasts, ESPN app, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcast. Brought to you by Capital One Quicksilver Card, earning unlimited 1.5% cash back on every purchase everywhere. What's in your wallet? And don't forget to tune into The Last Dance behind the scenes. Look there, a documentary of the 90 Chicago Bulls dynasty. The series continues Sunday at 6 p.m. on ESPN television. And then listen to the wrap-up show with Sliwa and myself immediately following the broadcast on ESPN Los Angeles' Twitter account, presented by State Farm, AT&T, Cincoro Tequila, and Coors Light. So, Greg, you sent me this story about the Pac-12. Now, you and I have had this discussion about the Pac-12 a number of times. I feel like they do a really bad job with the Pac-12 network. Nobody can see it. It's weird. It's not on DirecTV. Is it on Spectrum? I know it's on Frontier. I don't even know where it's on. Like, most people can't find it. It's really challenging. So the story today I read that you sent me was on Yahoo, and they're saying that Apple is trying to get in the game with Pac-12 and that they would broadcast exclusively all their games on Apple TV. So you would no longer be able to watch the Pac-12 games on ESPN or Fox Sports, that they would all exclusively be on Apple TV. Now, look, there's some pros and cons to that. All right. The pros are Apple TV is $4.99. So if you really love the Pac-12, it's $4.99. You know where you can get it. The cons are this, though. If you're ESPN and Fox and you no longer have rights to the Pac-12 and it's exclusively on a digital platform that's not yours, what's your incentive to talk about the Pac-12 unless one of your teams is in the national championship hunt, right? Like, you don't have that incentive anymore. And let's face it, whether it's fair or not, because of these rights deals, corporations and news outlets and media outlets, particularly media outlets like ESPN and TV companies like ESPN and Fox, are incentivized to talk about a product that they're going to put on their television, right? And whether it comes to promoting their particular game and the ways they promote that particular game, they can promote it by doing a feature on, you know, USC versus UCLA or, you know, Washington versus Oregon, or they can have Mario Cristobal on or Clay Helton on or whoever, right? To talk about whatever that's going on with their upcoming game or their, you know, the conference as a whole. You're not going to get as much of that if you're not on the big time networks. Like, you're going to lose some visibility. It's kind of what happened with hockey. So hockey, if you remember, left ESPN, you know, back in the 90s and went on something called the OLN, the Outdoor Life Network, which eventually became Versus, which eventually became NBC Sports. Now, it got better when it was NBC Sports because people could at least associate with that and find it. But it was a disaster initially early on. Now, it's a different age, and there's a lot of people with Apple TVs and a lot of people that subscribe to the service. I just wonder, you know, even though it's priced right, I just wonder if it's worth it.
Yeah, I see the pros to it because, you know, the country and is going away from digital cable anyway already. They're already going to cutting the cord for a lot of people. And so I get it. I see why they want to do it. But this is just the Pac-12 getting in their own way, as like they always do. Is your point is very solid in that ESPN doesn't want to talk about Pac-12 anyway. There's an East Coast bias now. And if you think there's an East Coast bias now, it's just going to get worse.
Right. The West Coast bias will be – it's actually the West Coast bias. You're biased against the West Coast. You can be biased for the East Coast too. So I'm not going to give you that L. I'm not going to give you that L.
Thank you.
I'm going to give you a neutral position there. But if you think it's bad now, it's only going to be worse if they go strictly on Apple TV.
Yeah, because I'll be able to watch it a lot easier because I can't watch Pac-12 Network now. It's a disaster. If I go, I have Apple TV. I can watch.
All right. I'm going to ask the audience right now. We only have 5 minutes left in the show. 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. If the Pac-12 went strictly on Apple TV. You couldn't get it on Fox. You couldn't get it on ESPN. Would you be in favor of that? It's $4.99 a month. Would that be something that is better for you than the current setup? 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. So you, Bergman, you've cut the cord. You'd be okay. You have Apple TV?
I do have Apple TV, but I also – but here's the other part of it, though, is you have the ESPN app. I have the ESPN app. I can watch – if UCLA is playing on ESPN, I can watch it. So they need to be able to have – certain games need to still be allowed to be played on ESPN or Fox or whatever it happens to be, because otherwise it's just a disaster.
Yeah, because here's the thing. Older people aren't watching on Apple TV. And older people are the people who are boosters and who have money, and they're going to be like, why aren't we on ESPN and Fox? Why are we on just Apple TV? I get there's money, but they initially, the money sounds good and the money might be right, but at the end of the day, they're going to be like, well, we're not getting talked about. And you know what boosters love is to get talked about.
Yeah, and Larry Scott is the commissioner of the Pac-12 who does everything wrong. He's going to screw this up too.
Interesting note I just saw here. We've been spending a lot of time, whenever we do talk about the draft, we've talked about Tua versus Herbert. And we were talking about, you know, I think the Dolphins and Chargers are going to take one or the other. Now, I would still take Tua over Herbert. And we're going to have a ton of draft guests as the week progresses. Because, look, I just don't know how much you guys are really into the draft. And if you want more draft talk, like, I'm good with that. Like, I'm willing to do it. I just don't – I'd like to – you guys can tweet me, at Sedano, and just tell me what you think. Because I feel like this – you know, I understand that there's not a lot of content right now. I just don't know how much of an appetite there is for draft talk on Monday and Tuesday of draft week when the Rams don't have a first-round pick and most of you don't care about the Chargers. Now, I know the Raiders have two first-round picks, and we've talked a lot about that over the last couple of weeks. And maybe because of that, we can discuss it more. But I'd like to start talking more draft tomorrow and clearly Thursday and Friday. But I am curious to see how you guys feel about the draft talk. But anyway, Vegas has come out. Not Vegas, but a sports book has put out odds. And now all of a sudden, it looks like Justin Herbert is the guy ahead of Tua to be the second QB taken. This is from David Purdom, who's our ESPN gambling guy. It's just, it's not a proper way to describe his title, but I'll just go with that. It says, entering April, sportsbooks had Tua as the big favorite to be the second quarterback taken in the NFL draft. And by the way, there is a lot of gambling going on who's being drafted where. Like, that is a big thing right now because, let's face it, you can't gamble on sports. I'll tell you what I gambled on this weekend. Horse racing. I threw a few bucks on some races because I have a friend who's a big horse racing guy. He just told me to bet it, and it worked. So that might be a bad vice to take up. But anyway, here's the rest of this story. 3 weeks later, the odds have dramatically shifted. Oregon's Justin Herbert has overtaken Tua as most sports books now have him as a small favorite to be the second quarterback taken. DraftKings and MGM have Herbert at -25 ahead of Tua, while PointsBet has them listed as co-favorites. So PointsBet had Tua as -650 to be the second quarterback drafted. Just a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, Herbert getting a lot of love. I think it's all a smokescreen. There's no way you can convince me that Justin Herbert, now he may have a higher ceiling because he's not as good a quarterback right now and because he's big and tall and all that stuff, but I just don't buy it, Bergman, that Tua's going after Herbert.
Could you imagine, though, that if he fell all the way to number 12 to the Raiders and this whole thing plays out of what we've been talking about for the last week and a half? 2 weeks?
Man, it would be it would be great for the Raiders. Nick Saban said it. If you pass on Tua, it's going to be like when the Dolphins passed on Drew Brees, and he should know that. He was the coach.
Right. I mean, and also Mina saying that the Raiders should just fold altogether if they don't take Tua if he's there.
Yeah, if he gets to 12, like, yeah, they might as well just fold shop. I
could totally imagine that happening too.
All right, we're done here. Thanks to Keith Law for joining us. Thanks to you guys for always tuning in and being there for us and calling in. We appreciate it. Thanks to Greg and Laura. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 10. See ya.